Welcome to Dalek Relaxation for Humans. Take a deep breath in through your nose. Now exhale through your mouth, softly. Focus on slowing down your breathing into a calm rhythm. Inhale. You are becoming more and more calm. Exhale. You are feeling more and more relaxed. Inhale. Calm. Exhale. Relaxed. Inhale. Calm. Exhale. Relaxed. Inhale. Calm. Exhale. Relaxed. Continue to breathe slowly. Stresses of daily life are floating away. Your tension has been exterminated. Exterminated!
This week's materials, fact or fiction, the intersection of science, fantasy and reality, takes us to the Doctor Who franchise, or maybe more correctly, the universe in which Doctor Who exists. But not Doctor Who, him or herself, but Doctor Who's nemesis, the Daleks, and the metal that the Daleks encase themselves in, you know, in those pepper shaker-like things. And here to tell us about real-life equivalents, if any might exist, from Auckland University's Physics Department, where she's a postdoctoral research fellow, or maybe a doctoral research fellow, is Eloise Stevens. Kia ora, Eloise.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And yes, I'm a postdoctoral research fellow. I have quite finished my PhD now.
Oh, congratulations. What are you researching at the moment?
Right, so I am looking at the deaths of very massive stars and how they explode as supernovae and give us neutron stars and black holes that then go on to merge and give us kilonovae, and how all these incredible explosions give us the elements to create planets and life like on Earth.
Kilonovae,
yeah.
As in, and supernova so big that if one happened within, what, a few light years of us, it would wipe us out?
Well, it's hard to tell because it depends on the supernova, because some of them are so powerful that they actually have a black hole in their heart that launches a powerful gamma ray burst, jets of gamma ray burst. And if those were a little too close and pointed towards Earth, it would wipe out our atmosphere. It would fry us to a crisp, and it would be quite the painful death.
Really? So those gamma rays, if they're pointed in the right direction, if there's enough of them, how do the rays wipe out the atmosphere?
So radiation can actually, even radiation from the sun would be able to erode the atmosphere if we didn't have a magnetic field, if the Earth did not have a magnetic field. But if there's sufficient radiation, you would destroy some of the protective layers in the atmosphere, like the ozone, which protects us from UV and more deadly radiation. So not only would you get this massive dose of extremely powerful light jetted at you, but you would also destroy the protective layer from the atmosphere that that saves you from that sort of stuff in everyday life.
Does it come to a point where the gamma rays are so powerful that our magnetic field isn't enough to repel them?
Yeah, basically.
What would it look like from planet Earth if a supernova or if gamma rays from a supernova were pointed in our direction? What would we see?
That's a very good question, actually. A bit far from the Daleks, but
I know. I'm sorry, but your subject area is so interesting. I've gone on the detour. I hope you don't mind.
That's absolutely fine. Well, actually, we do see those gamma rays very often. They're only very dangerous if they're very close, but we do see gamma rays from plenty of astronomical objects. For example, blazars and quasars, which are galaxies where at their center they have a supermassive black hole that is hoovering up some material, dust and gas, and feeding on that, launching one of those gamma ray bursts one of those jets. It's not called a gamma ray burst, but it's a jet of powerful radiation. And if it's pointed in the right direction, then it's called a blazar, because you're looking right down that jet and you can observe it with your gamma ray telescopes.
Do they tend to be spinning very fast, these things?
The black holes, yeah, yes, absolutely. Anything that gives you a gamma ray burst, whether it's a long or short, is spinning really quickly, whether it's a black hole or a neutron star.
So the blazars would be going blip, 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 something like that. In terms of...
Right, I see what you mean. Yeah. No, so actually, there are other objects, spinning objects that launch jets that can give you that sort of effect. That's called a pulsar, that's a neutron star. But the blazar is spinning sort of in the plane of the sky. So the jet is always pointed towards you, if that makes sense. So the jet itself is perpendicular to the plane of the rotation. So the rotation...
So it's basically along its axis of rotation then, right?
Yes, so the disk is, yes, essentially. So you've got your jet along the axis of rotation, you've got a disk of matter that's rotating around and that the black hole is feeding on.
And bad luck for any planet in the way of stuff coming out of a blazar.
Absolutely. You don't need a Death Star.
First off, what's the closest that we know of in terms of one of these supernova events, kilonova? What's the closest that we're aware of here on Earth?
Oh, my God, that's a very good question. I did. So supernovae-wise, we've had a few in the galaxy in the past few hundred years, but they're still quite far away, still quite a few light years away. The most recent one that was the closest was actually in a nearby galaxy in the Large Magellanic Cloud. It was it exploded in 1987. And the Large Magellanic Cloud is a good 50 megaparsecs away. So 50 million parsecs. I'll have to translate that into light years if you'll allow
yes,
me.
Yes, go for it.
One parsec to a light year.
There she goes.
Yes, absolutely. I'm using a calculator.
Well, that's all right. I'm just loving hearing your work.
So that will be like 150,000 million, 50 million light years. So that's quite far away. It's in another galaxy. Let's put it that way. So it would take you millions of years if you could travel at the speed of light to reach that galaxy.
Eloise, I promise to start asking about Daleks very soon, but one final question on kilonova. Is there any evidence within the Earth's crust, in our rocks or anything like that, that suggests we've been bombarded by something, maybe obviously didn't wipe out life completely, but might have affected life on Earth significantly?
Sorry, I'm just checking the light years again.
That
is, yes, 158,000 light years, not millions. I thought that number was too high. I just want to double check myself.
Yes, I was wondering about that, but I didn't dare.
You put me on the spot, I have
I
to
know.
Say.
You're doing so well here, Eloise, and you'll never want to talk to me again, won't you?
No, absolutely not. I'm very happy with doing things live, and I much prefer checking things when I'm not sure. It's much better to do it that way. So, yeah, the problem with living on Earth isn't so much the radiation that's deadly, it's the space rocks that end up on the planet. So that's what wiped out the dinosaurs, really.
Right.
Big asteroids. So that's what you need to worry about, not the supernovae, because they're so far away. Even within the galaxy, that's you're probably going to be fine. So you don't need to worry too much about those.
And there's no star nearby that has the potential to become a super or kilonova.
So Betelgeuse.
Our astronomer Alan Gilmore, who we have on regularly from the Mount John Observatory above Lake Tekapo, has talked about Betelgeuse. And every now and then, doesn't Betelgeuse wax and wane in terms of its brightness? And some people said, oh, this could be the sign of something big. But Alan's argued that, no, it does this quite a lot and nothing to panic about yet.
Yeah, no, there's nothing to panic about. And Betelgeuse is a good 600 light years from us, so it's quite a trot to get there. And Betelgeuse is not ready to explode, but she is definitely a precursor to a supernova. She will become a supernova at the end of its life, absolutely.
Now, maybe, in terms of plot devices, one of the explanations for the Daleks, and I'm finally getting you onto your topic, and sorry about that, could be that their home planet was destroyed by, say, a supernova or something like that, and they've got it in for the cosmos, because the cosmos had it in for them, and that could explain why they're so miserable and seem to look down on everything, look down their plungers on every other living thing. But the thing about Daleks is, the actual life form, I always thought they were robots. For years, I thought they were robots. I didn't realise that they were actually living things inside a shell. Where did you discover that?
Well, I saw it in Doctor Who. I saw it in one of the episodes. I can't remember which one, but I remember at some point a Dalek just coming out right out of its shell and jumping on somebody. So maybe a Doctor Who expert could tell us exactly which episode that
yeah.
is, but I remember that image very distinctly, this blob, green blob being launched at somebody. But they're quite fragile when they're not in their armour, so it's not a good idea for a Dalek to escape its shell.
And the armour is the subject of this material's fact or fiction, and what is it called?
Dalekanium.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it?
I'm doing that properly. Dalekanium is really interesting to me because when doing research on that particular material, I found some really interesting stuff. So Dalekanium, some people say that it's an alloy, that they use the word polycarbide, which I tried to Google because I am no chemist, but I did recognize the word carbide in there. Can't find any trace of polycarbide in chemistry. Maybe it's there somewhere, but a carbide is a compound where you have a metal with some carbon in it. So it's a mix of carbon and a metal. Now, you might know that steel, for example, is a mix of iron and carbon.
Yep.
So there will be some carbide components in steel material. So that kind of rang a bell to me when I was looking up at that Dalek, kind of, that sounds like steel. The fact that it's bulletproof as well, that it's very strong material, kind of echoes the idea of steel as well. But what is the smoking gun for me is something I found this morning, actually. I find a reference to a comic called The Plague of Death. And in The Plague of Death, a plague of rust is spreading through the city on the Dalek city in on their
in Dalekville. Dalekville, yep.
Yeah. And that plague of rust can decimate the Dalekanium within minutes, which is a little bit fast, you know, if you compare it to steel. But that idea of rust consuming Dalekanium is very similar to what you would expect to happen with iron or steel. So it seems to be the kind of a kind of extra super powerful steel, maybe more bulletproof, because I don't remember a Dalek having indents in its armor when it's being thrown things at, whereas steel would be indented by any sort of blunt force. But it seems to echo those sort of properties.
Is iron the only metal that rusts, however?
Well, actually, yes. Technically, rust is specifically the oxide of iron.
Yeah.
But it's not the only metal that becomes oxidized when exposed to air and oxygen in particular. For example, copper will form an oxide, a top layer. That's why those, if you've got a copper sheet left exposed to the elements, it will eventually turn green. That's what gives the Statue of Liberty or the roof of the opera in Paris their color, this distinctive green color.
Ah.
But the main difference between something like copper oxide and iron oxide is that iron oxide is very brittle. It falls off. It doesn't stick to the iron that is beneath it. And so it leaves the iron exposed to further damage. Whereas something like copper, the oxide that forms on top, that patina, becomes a protective layer because it sticks very well and it protects the copper underneath from further damage from the elements. So when you look at the plague of rust that plagued the Daleks, that's very damaging, and that's something that echoes what happens to steel, even if you want to give it a name other than rust, which, you know, is very much what happens to iron and steel. The properties are very similar to what happens to iron and steel when they are exposed to the elements and just fall apart over time.
Is there any incarnation of iron that rusts more readily?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not a chemist.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, iron and steel on their own will rust much more easily than stainless steel. That's why it's called stainless steel. By the way, it's called stainless, not stain never. So stainless steel might rust if you've got beautiful stainless steel knives. Make sure you don't leave them underwater or wet and damp on a counter because over time.
I never knew that, Eloise. I always thought stainless meant never stain, no. Never. But it's not a case of never. It just means less stain.
It's much less likely, and it occurs at a much smaller rate. And also, it depends on how good your stainless steel is. But if you've got a good piece of stainless steel and you want to keep it at its best for the longest time, make sure you dry it out. You know, it doesn't hurt. but yes, you know, if you've got steel on its own and iron on their own, they will be much more prone to rust. But we can imagine that the Daleks have created alloys of the Dalekanium to prevent that sort of stuff from happening.
Now, if Dalekanium is steel, that's the thing, is it? What alloy might it be? Because, okay, you pointed out already that you fire a bullet and it bounces off. So that's harder than your normal run-of-the-mill steel. It's also a really good conductor in terms of Dalekanium. And mm-hmm. and the other thing is Daleks are, at least in more recent incarnations, they weren't so much in the early Doctor Who series. They basically went around on wheels and you know, ladders and stairs. You never saw them going up them. But these days, of course, Daleks can, you know, go up and down like a little rocket ship, like a helicopter. They've got little engines underneath them that propel them.
Yeah.
So that makes me think that this metal, whatever it is, can't be too heavy.
Well, yeah, it can't be too heavy, but it depends on how powerful their their little propellers are, obviously. Now, you were right to point out that it is a good conductor. And when you look at the periodic table of elements, that really puts Dalekanium in the center where you've got iron, copper, nickel, cobalt, those elements that sit bang in the middle. So if Dalekanium was its own thing, and not just steel, but had similar properties to steel, to iron rather, and similar properties to copper, that's a very, very good conductor, similar properties to gold, that's also an excellent conductor, then you could imagine that it would sit right in there with those other elements, right?
What about, and maybe this isn't really strictly about Dalekanium, but I'm thinking of the energy needed to propel the Daleks. It's also a life support system. The little mushy creature with the tentacles in there, that's still got to be supported. You know, it needs to have obviously the right temperature and air and all that kind of stuff. I assume they still breathe air. The amount of energy that the Dalek uses, is it practical that it could have some kind of machine under there and actually still have enough room for the actual Dalek life form?
Well, the Daleks are very small, right? So the actual Daleks inside of their armor are very, very small. So it kind of fits exactly what you're saying, that it takes a lot of machinery and power to make those armors what they are and allow them to move and be powerful exterminators, right? So yes, Daleks, the actual creatures are very small in their encasing. They're kind of only at the top in a little seat, from what I remember of the.
Do you think they're running off some kind of atomic energy?
They could be. That's what would make sense with something that size, because I can't imagine a Dalek plugged into a wall and charging up at night, like a poor phone or a tablet. So with nuclear energy, the advantage is that you can contain that energy in a very, very small amount of material, right? But then you have to be able to harness that nuclear energy. So the way that we harness nuclear energy on Earth is that we use it to boil things, to create steam, and then that steam propels a dynamo that then creates electricity. So where would that fit in a Dalek? I'm not entirely sure. Maybe they have like future batteries. You know, we've got batteries nowadays in cars and Tesla cars that that can work for extended periods of time. Maybe the Daleks have fantastic technology that allows them to power their.
They'd have to be very powerful and super light. Hey, but you've just given me an idea, Dalek steampunk. You'd have little steam engines driving, and they're nuclear, you know, powered by heat from nuclear fission, or if we're really lucky, fusion. But given how little the Daleks think of the universe, I'm sure they'd go for fission because it creates more toxic waste. So you could have steampunk, you know, steam-driven Daleks. There's another thing, however. Is there anything, because the Daleks, if I understand it right, bullets won't get through, shells won't get through that we fire at them. And bombs. Mm-hmm. So what are the metals? Is there any metal that's capable, if it's thick enough, of keeping things like that out? That exists in the real world. In the real, yes, on Earth.
Well, if you make steel that's thick enough, it will definitely do that. So it's not just a matter of the material that you use, but how much you use of it. So steel is pretty decent. Obviously, for bulletproof, you naturally go to Kevlar, which is a certain kind of plastic, if I remember correctly, especially woven to absorb the energy.
Yeah, that's a fiber, isn't it?
It's a fiber, indeed. And the way it's woven and what it's made of absorbs the energy of the bullet so that it doesn't penetrate. It's kind of interesting to see how, well, it's, you know, it's one of the beauties of fiction, because you can simplify things a little bit by having one material that has properties from three or four different materials on Earth that can help you propel and support your story, because otherwise it would be can you imagine, like, explaining, well, Daleks are made of steel and also Kevlar and also this and also that. Like, we don't have time for that. They're made of Dalekanium, and it has all of these properties, and it works great. Yes, it does seem like you'd need some other form of materials on Earth to recreate those properties.
Is it possible to mix steel and Kevlar in the same material?
Well, you could have steel behind Kevlar or Kevlar behind steel.
Right.
But you wouldn't be able to make them into one thing. If that makes sense. They're completely different compounds.
And what do you think is the most likely candidate in terms of the alloy? If we're talking about iron here, what is it alloyed with?
Well, like I said, because there's a lot of mention of carbide, that it's a Dalekanium carbide. It would be mixed with carbon, just like iron is mixed with carbon to make steel. In fact, I think there is a mention somewhere that Dalekanium in its purest form is a very strong metal that can only be worked by the Daleks and that other races on Skaro can't actually manipulate it that well. They have to work with the alloy. So I think Dalekanium on its own is a pure metal, and then you can create some different forms of it with other compounds like carbon.
Right then. So given the laws of physics as they apply to elements, do you think it's possible that we could have a creature in a shell like this, and that shell could contain the creature, but also the energy needed for Daleks to do all the Dalek things they do, not just moving around, but also blowing other things up and sending rays around? Either do we have the energy source, or is there a potential energy source that could drive such a thing? Or are we actually needing to find some new metal that doesn't actually exist on the periodic table?
Well, I think that it's not just a matter of the way we're looking at not just the metal casing, but everything else that the Daleks do. I think the question is beyond Dalekanium and more to the power source and how compact can that be? It's hard to answer because, frankly, looking at what Daleks do with the death lasers, etc., I can't really approximate how much energy they use, but it seems to be a lot. It seems to be a lot, especially when they started flying in more recent TV series. So it's hard to tell, but definitely it would have to be a very very heavy battery if it was one, or some new technology that they just have to invent because us humans are not quite there yet.
Well, maybe it's always going to be a stretch to rationalise an invention of fantasy when it's based on a salt and pepper shaker, you know, that goes around, moves around the table and then goes
and
destroy.
Has a plunger for an arm. Are you saying that the salt and pepper shaker with a plunger for an arm is not realistic? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying you need a good imagination. If you've got a good imagination, it's realistic.
Good imagination, straight from the 60s.
You know, that's like the 6-foot giant ants from the film Them, and the special effects guy was talking to the director, and I said, I've got them ready, and the director said, well, but do they look real? And the guy said, well, as real as any 6-foot ant can be.
Yeah. Exactly. Sometimes you just have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, you know. Doctor Who never claimed to be scientifically accurate. But it is interesting to see all of the corollaries between the properties of Dalekanium and the properties of things that we have on Earth, like the fact that it's bulletproof, the fact that it rusts, etc., etc. It kind of shows that there is a very human-centric vision to all of those stories, you know, even if they're completely fantastical and deep in science fiction and they're not looking to be any anything like we have on Earth, they still have properties that we can bring back to what we have here because that's what humans know. And the people who write Doctor Who are humans after all.
Eloise, it's been lovely talking with you and good luck with your postdoctoral research.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Dr. Eloise Devance, physicist doing postdoctoral research at Auckland University, talking about real-life equivalents to the science fiction material Dalekanium, which is what encases Daleks in the Doctor Who empire, or at least the Doctor Who saga. What do you call it? I mean, it's a series, really. It's a TV series, first and foremost, which just happens still to be going, as far as I know. They've still got Time Lords coming through the BBC.